Welcome to the Tracking Connections podcast, and thanks for listening.
We feature voices from around the world sharing stories of working intentionally with deep nature connection in ways that transform lives, families, projects, and communities. I'm Sarah.
I'm Aiden.
And I'm John.
And we are your hosts from Living Connection First. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Tracking Connections. Aiden here.
Hi, John here. Excited to have a conversation about exploring and visiting new places with a question in mind that Sarah was bringing along with us on a recent adventure that we took.
Hey, everyone. Sarah here. John and I just got back from a couple weeks in South Africa and Botswana and unpacking a lot of really powerful and beautiful experiences that we had there. So one thing that we wanted to talk about is this concept of harmonizing with nature and connecting to our ancient nervous system in a deep connection with nature and other people. So one question that I was carrying on this trip was a curiosity around tracking and whether or not that brings us into deep connection with a place fast. Does it bring us in connection with other people more efficiently than, you know, if we were just to socialize in a quote unquote normal fashion? So naturally arriving in Cape Point and being greeted by Craig Foster and his tribe of really special people that he rolls with there. They're all very nature connected folks. We all, you know, immediately go tracking. That's the first thing that we do. You know, the morning that we arrive in the evening, and the next morning, Craig and Dee, our hosts, they say, well, do you want to sleep or do you want to go tracking? And of course, we go tracking. So we basically were tracking as much as possible throughout the whole trip. And I can say, you know, on this end of it, the answer is yes. Tracking definitely brings you into connection with place faster. You know, it's fairly obvious, right? Because tracking is looking at the ground, seeing what the animals are doing. Who are the animals, first of all, right? So my first set of baboon tracks, that's just like mind-blowing. My first, you know, this is my first trip to Africa. So baboons are super special beings, and seeing their feet and what their feet look like as they touch the ground, who is like really cool experience. Well, maybe we'll show pictures of that.
Yeah. So Sarah had told me this question, and I love this question because here we were, you know, we're in a new place. We're traveling, you know, I've been to Africa, you know, multiple times over the last 14 years. And so it wasn't my first visit to Cape Point or to Craig or to Botswana. But I was, you know, just reflecting on how cool it is, because Sarah just kept talking about how interesting it's going to be for her to go to a continent, a place she's never been. And she told me her question, and I loved the question. So I decided I wanted to live the question with her. And we talked to Craig Foster about it after being there for a couple of days. We told him that we were holding this question together that Sarah had brought up. And his response was immediate. You know, Craig, in his book, Amphibious Soul, How to Find the Wild in a Tame World, and also in My Octopus Teacher, the Netflix documentary, you know, Craig is talking about this oldest language, and he's talking about this language, which is not really in words, but it's a language that we share with elephants, we share with deer, you know, we share with the chickadees that visit our bird feeder. This language of awareness and communication, in that, you know, one of my favorite lines in Craig's book is kind of in the very beginning, and he talks about how the, you know, the beings that live under the water in the great African sea forest, the kelp forest there near Craig's place near Cape Point, they taught him how to move. You know, they taught him how to move. So in, you know, and he sort of just brushes by that very quickly, but there's so much in that statement, you know. And when we talk about tracking, it's a very holistic kind of definition that we hold, both Sarah, I, and Aiden, because we're all trained in a similar lineage of tracking, which is not just looking at footprints, you know, because when we say tracking, well, it must be about tracks. But, you know, as Tom Brown, my late mentor, used to say, show me something that isn't a track. You know, the Grand Canyon is a track, right? The moon is a track. Even the earth is a track of something that happened, you know, and that created what is. You know, everything is literally a track. So What does tracking mean? It just means paying attention. And it means paying attention not just with your eyes, but with all your senses. You know, tracking weather, tracking wind, tracking the plant communities, tracking the birds and the interactions of the insects with the flowers. And, you know, what does it mean? I guess it really just means to pay attention, but to think about it as communication. So how do we learn this oldest language of communicating with the beings of our place that are around us? You know, the people, the dogs, the buildings, but also the squirrels and the birds and the trees, you know, and having essentially a, not a passive observational relationship. Oh, I'm a human, I'm here, I'm looking at that, you know, like I'm in a museum, I'm looking at that art piece, or I'm looking at that artifact. It's not that, you know, it's, I am in a conversation, I am in communication with, through tracking, right? So if I'm gonna learn to move from the animals, what does that actually mean? Well, if I walk out my door in a hurry, all the birds fly away really quickly, you know, and I create this big explosion of birds flying away. And then the fox knows that I'm coming out and the deer knows. And, you know, so the message of me coming out the door is being spread very quickly around me for hundreds of yards in all directions. If I learn to move from the beings around me, what that actually means is that I'm using all my senses to be aware of the patterns of their movement and behavior. And I am stepping into this conversation of movement with them and taking feedback from them, right? So here, I'm stepping out, I'm going quietly. I notice the Junco suddenly is nervous and stopped feeding and he's looking at me. So I stop too. And, you know, that we call that releasing the wave, you know, like if you're taking pressure off that wave that's going out from you just simply by pausing, right? And then that bird goes back to feeding and that's your cue. Okay, well, now we can be comfortable and move together, right? So there's this conversation going on. So, you know, we all learn to do that to some degree, right? We learn to be in our family culture in a similar way. You know, we know what makes our sister mad or what makes our father make us do chores or whatever, right? We pay attention. We all know what that is. So we're just applying that in a more general sense. But there's another layer to it, which I think, you know, we'll get into here a bit. It's sort of tied into the time we got to spend with our friends among the San Bushmen in Botswana. But I want to pass it over to you, Sarah.
That communication and listening was really obtuse with the elephant people. We had an amazing camp on the Mbudi River, and the elephants every day would show up right there, right at our camp. One day there was about 50 elephants, and they're so close. I want to say you need to listen to them. And of course, not everybody has that awareness. So, you know, our guide, Johnson, is kind of making sure we understand that concept, that we need to pay attention, we need to walk slowly. And of course, John and myself and the Bushmen are already there, right? But so that power that they have, their presence, you know, and their deep silence, their deep sensitivity is so apparent when you're really tuning in and you're really listening to them. And that there's a real communication. I mean, there was a bull elephant literally like 5 feet from our tent. And John and I were watching from inside the tent. And, you know, bull elephants can be aggressive. And they're also reasonable people, right? Like, they're not just angry. They're not just going to charge you. And there's this communication that is absolutely necessary to really honor that being and what they're doing and emanate your sense of peace and calm and your own intention of, you know, being in that flow, you know, like John's talking about the animals teaching us how to move. And when you're tracking that communication, it becomes very clear how movement and your concentric ring affects them. So after the bull elephant moved away, maybe about 25, 30 feet, John and I slowly unzipped the tent door and slowly moved out and sat on the porch, the quote unquote porch of our tent. And it was fine. He was still, the bull elephant was there. He was aware of us. We could feel if we made a movement that was perhaps a little faster, that there was a very subtle response and awareness on his part of us moving. But there, that deep communication was really engaged. And I've got so much gratitude for having that awareness and feeling that relationship and that communication. And then, you know, as John was talking about paying attention, right? So, of course, we're paying attention in that moment when there's 50 elephants around. But then when you pan out on the landscape and you start to look at how many elephant tracks there are across miles and miles and miles of land, big ones and really little ones, quote unquote, tiny elephant tracks that are 4 inches in diameter or so, to you know, bull elephants that are probably 18 inches, 15 or 18 inches in diameter or long. So they're everywhere. The tracks are everywhere. The tracks of their feet on the ground are everywhere. But then you look at the Mapani, which is the major, the main vegetation there. It can become a small tree of about 20 to 30 feet, but almost none of them are because of the elephants. So you're driving, you look across the landscape, and every Mapani tree that you can see is totally pruned down by elephants. And prune would be a gentle word, hacked down by the elephants. I mean, they're completely landscaping the entire ecosystem. Like, they are completely in charge of the landscape. And it's remarkable to, you know, drive by and there'll be one working on a Mapani tree. And they're so gentle in the way that they move. You know, they just stand there and they use their trunk to break these big branches. So they're making these big breaking sounds, but they're moving so slow. And their faces, they're just like totally relaxed. Like, this is what I do. I'm this huge, gentle giant with all this power. And one of my favorite moments was John reflecting on how they are the rulers of the land. Like, they are the rulers of the land. No animals hunt them except for sometimes the lions and the hyenas will go for the young, for the babies. But otherwise, they're not huntable. They stay together in groups. The moms keep their babies underneath them, like actually literally under their bodies to protect them from predators. If predators come around, then the other elephants gather around to protect the young ones. And the amount of them, I mean, there are so many elephants. And just their size in conjunction with their absolute, I want to say, peacefulness. Like, there was tell the story, John, about the baboons who came in to the camp there.
Yeah, I was telling Sarah that they're large and in charge. that little phrase has never been truer than when you're with, 500 elephants. That bull elephant, so in essence, you know, he was so close to our tent, it was, you know, obviously very dangerous. You know, and we were told, literally, you know, by Johnson in the safety briefing, if they're that close, don't go out of your tent, you know, just stay in. And you have to wait, you know, like, okay, this is Africa. We don't have anywhere to go. I'm not really looking at my watch. We don't have appointments, right? but I do kind of want to leave the tent. I want to get back over to where I can, you know, get a cup of coffee and visit our two Bushman friends, Guta and Tama, who are over there. Now I can hear them talking, but we can't leave, you know, we're sort of in there. And so we're watching through the window and he's feeding on a Mapani tree, which was unfortunately very close to the corner of our tent. And he's not in must, you know, so he's not one of those males that gets agitated for no reason. You know, he's definitely, as Sarah said, he's, you know, he's chill. But he's feeding and he's happily feeding. And you can't tell an elephant to stop feeding and move on, buddy, you know. But I'm watching out the window for this opportunity where when he finally puts a little distance between the tent and us, and maybe he's looking in a different direction, I'm going to open that zipper very slowly. I'm going to slip out to the right and go down the side of my tent. So keeping the tent between me and him, and then use the tents as a visual screen as I walk, you know, back towards the center of camp. And that was my plan. So I'm watching and I'm looking out the window towards, so that was the east side of the tent the baboons came from, right? Because that was where the sun was rising on that side. And I see this troop of baboons coming along the edge of this waterway towards us. And the elephant notices the baboons as well. And the elephant suddenly turns from feeding and starts walking towards those baboons with his ears forward. And I could immediately see that, oh, this elephant knows these baboons, right? In fact, I think the day before we had seen a big bull elephant with a troop of baboons not far from where we were, you know, where our tent was. And there was definitely an interaction going on. Like there was some, I don't know, like what business do they have with each other, you know? And why should this elephant, you know, like feel like he has to bother the baboons? Like, you know, like I couldn't work that out. But they obviously, there's obviously a story between these people, you know, that I'm not privy to. So anyway, this male elephant sees the baboons and he starts kind of walking, not, he wasn't charging them, but he was definitely walking authoritatively towards them with his ears forward. And the baboons saw him, you know, and they're so expressive, like their facial expressions, their body language says it all. And, you know, they immediately decide to, instead of follow the water line, they're going to go now around the back of the tents, just like I was about to. But I'm like, okay, well, here's my opportunity, you know, and me and the baboons went in that circuitous way around the tents over to, they didn't end up in Camp Central, but they ended up going around the camp behind it, you know, on the opposite side of the water side of our tent. So, you know, that was really interesting. And you know, I'm in agreement with Sarah, but it's like, you know, I was talking about juncos. I'm looking at juncos right now as I'm doing this podcast with you. They're hopping all around me, and chickadees and jays and, you know, but it's what's true in our backyards with these little birds is true of elephants. It's true of, you know, baboons. It's true of, you know, virtually everything. What would you call it? Like a call and response. Like we take an action, there's a response, you know, pay attention.
I want to contrast our experience with the elephants with one that I witnessed. So Johnson was our guide, and he was so pleased with our etiquette that the elephants would be around all day. Elephants are his favorite. I asked him, what's your favorite animal? And he said, the elephants. This was the day before our first encounter with them at the camp. And he was so pleased with us because the elephants hung out and they felt comfortable. And I think it was the second day. The elephants again were right outside the camp. I was at the tent and I see in the middle of the river to the east, a group of people. And I'm like, how are the people in the river? I couldn't understand what was happening. I was like, it must be a little island or something. And then lo and behold, they're coming down on rafts and it's a guided tour. And I'm watching the elephants and I'm watching the rafts approaching. And clearly these people have done this before. They're guiding other people. And as they're passing, so they get close, the elephants are kind of moving out of the way. And at one point, the leader of the boat, you know, the person with the big stick pushing them down the river, starts making this noise. And it's like this authoritative noise. It's not aggressive, but it's kind of authoritative. And it's intended to move the elephants. And the elephants move, and they move not like slowly, like I'm gently getting out of your way. They move with a little kick in their step, like, you know, they've been disturbed and they're, I don't know if intimidated is the right word, but they're moving out of the human's way. And that, I felt something in that, you know, that's not the kind of relationship that I want to have with elephants. I suppose in the situation where it is necessary, right? I'm hunting, I'm going in my direction, or I need to get home. You know, I need to slide through this space. But there was a contrast for me in that where our camp was really listening, really honoring, really respecting their lifestyle, right? Their strategy, what they're doing today, and they're eating and they're bathing, and this is their place right now, versus this kind of energy of pushing them away. I guess the contrast really is in connection. And the way that Johnson was really lifting up, like we were in a particular relationship with those elephants. And that's connection. That's the connection that I strive for and I nurture from.
What you just described it feels like an end state, right? The choice to sort of be receptive and in connection with versus the sort of authoritative, sort of hierarchical, I am going to drive nature away as a way of keeping us safe, as opposed to I'm going to be in relationship with nature. And the thing I keep thinking about as you are all sharing these stories is, you know, how does this come back to me in my backyard and in my neighborhood? And how does this come back to me in my, you know, interactions with people throughout the day, you know, and this idea of tracking. And I was sort of imagining myself tracking this morning as I, you know, made my way to my office and, you know, trying to look at the parallels because, you know, you guys asked that question, does tracking connect us faster? And you answered your, you know, in the affirmative pretty quickly. Yes, I think it does. So it started making me think, well how does tracking connect us faster? And to me, I can see these different layers and it starts with awareness. But now after you talked about the river guide and sort of his choice to drive the elephants back, I think it starts even before awareness. It starts with intention, and the intention being, what is the relationship that I want to have with my environment, you know, and being in connection with my environment, and what does that bring me as opposed to sort of attempting to dominate or control my environment, right? And there's this sort of feeling in the one hand of dancing and discovering and allowing, and a feeling on the other hand of maybe there's some safety there, but the control and the rigidity of that. And so I think to me, that's the maybe the very first ring is sort of that intention in the first place. And so then if I have that intention to be in connection, to dance with, then none of that works if I don't have awareness first, and that awareness of what is around me and putting my awareness out beyond my own sphere of influence or sphere of disturbance. You know, and I think about, you know, driving into the parking lot for me this morning and noticing who is coming where, and, you know, the sun, because it's autumn, the angle of the sun at 8 a.m. is in driver's eyes. And so me noticing that the driver coming towards me can't see me very well and paying attention to that. And, you know, driving through a neighborhood where there are people walking their dogs, and, you know, just immediately there's all of these opportunities to sort of be the aggressive driver or try to get people out of my way versus noticing and allowing space for them, you know. And then I think one of the things I think about with the awareness is this idea of tracking. If everything is a track, it's like even in the built world, you walk into a space and that space is the way that it is for a reason. And so it's sort of asking that question, what is the intention of this space? What is the reason? And perhaps you might come across the idea of like, well, actually the reason that actually looks like that's neglected over there, or maybe that hasn't been, you know, super intentional about how they did that. But that in and of itself is a track and is telling you something. But all of this kind of starts with the awareness of looking around. And then I think about the elephant and the gift of the elephant, you know, and that we all have. There are elephants in the world, proverbially, things that are going to get our attention, whether we want to or not, things that we can sort of surrender this idea of control because, oh, yeah, I definitely can't control that, you know, but you're sort of then, you know, it allows you to kind of look in that direction. But that next ring being, OK, now I'm aware of what's going on. So now I'm turning that awareness inward and going, well, what is it that I'm putting out there? What is my own disturbance bubble? I'm now aware of my own disturbance. And then you guys described a third layer of the elephant being aware of you, and you're seeing that interplay. And then it seems like that almost kind of bounces back and forth. Well, I know that you know that I know that you know, but really that's sort of what's happening. And then I really love the baboons coming in because then you're also becoming aware of the elephant's awareness of the environment beyond you. And it's just a really cool thing. And like the richness and the layers that come from this, and just like the, I don't know, it just sounds really fun and like really satisfying and nurturing to be in that space. And then I can imagine the guide coming down and, you know, sort of shooing the elephants away. And there's a very different feeling there for me. And I, you know, I know for me, that's not how I want to be out in nature, but not really how I want to be anywhere. So it's like this, the, you know, again, it comes back to that intention. It's really feels cyclical of like, how do I want to be showing up, right? Do I want to be shooing away things in my life, or do I want to be dancing with them and in connection with them and sort of learning the interplay? So that's my reflection on what I've heard so far.
I want to go back to that question, because this whole conversation started with that simple question that Sarah was holding. Do we connect to a place faster through this kind of tracking? You know, that Aiden, you just did a nice job of translating what we're talking about into the parking lot. That's perfect. Sarah kept telling me at the airport as we were moving, because we had some connections we had to make, you know, thread the needle, which is Sarah's code word for there's a gap right there. That person's moving at this speed. This person's moving at that speed. And this other person is intersecting from that direction. You've got this opportunity, thread the needle, you know, like it's like a video game, you know, we're like these video game pieces, you know, with our suitcases dragging behind us. So yeah, you know, that this, I've heard it called situational awareness, right? You know, when they talk about it in the space of security or combat or, you know, situations like that, situational awareness, it just means, you know, paying attention to everything around you in a particular way. But we were reflecting on how quickly we grew very close to the people that work with the Sea Change Project with Craig, you know, and Craig echoed that. It's like, well, look, you know, we're all out here celebrating this really big awareness together. My curiosity becomes Diogo's curiosity, becomes Sarah's curiosity, becomes Craig's curiosity, you know, Giannis and Pippa and all, you know, all these people who we're with, we're like moving like a troop of baboons ourselves, you know, and, you know, instead of picking up things to eat or digging up roots like the baboons were doing around us, we're picking up information together, you know, and everything is a possible mystery, right? And we're walking along this one beach on the Atlantic Ocean side of Cape Point Nature Reserve, and we see these tracks. The sand isn't perfect for making perfect tracks, so you can't exactly pick out exact detail, but you can see a very particular pattern. And to me, it looked like a seam on fabric, or it looked like a zipper. And then all of a sudden, those same tracks would spread out. Then you could see separated feet, one, you know, 1 foot, then the other. But then they would go back into that tangled zipper pattern. You know, Craig is pointing that out, and he tells me it's a plover, which is a shorebird, you know, related to a sandpiper. He says, oh, that's that little plover. And I said, gosh, Craig, I mean, the way they're zippered together, it looks to me like a dove. Are you sure that it's a plover? But of course, I'm from North America. This is Craig's beach. Who am I to challenge Craig, right? But at the same time, that's kind of what it's about also. It's like, you know, I want to challenge that because not because I want to prove you wrong. I want to challenge it because I want to really understand. And that's really what it boils down to. And so we spent a solid hour tracking plovers and then looking for them on the beach so we could actually see them make tracks and then go over and study them to get the answer we were looking for, which is in the end, when I had to turn to Craig and I'm like, you're right. These are plover tracks, you know, and the plovers that I know from my beach don't do this, right? But they basically, he called it the accordion style. You know, sometimes they're compressed together and sometimes they're opened up. And, you know, he called it the accordion bird tracks, you know, and I like that image, you know, because when the plover's in a hurry, the tracks spread out. And when the plover's not in a hurry, they're very close together. And the plover is going back and forth between this very dainty, slow walk where the tracks are almost right on top of their own, you know, one right after the other, to when the plover wants to cover ground quickly. And the plover's doing both of those things intermittently. So I learned from that. But we were talking about this process of my curiosity becoming Craig's curiosity. Like, he already knew they were plover tracks. But then when I asked that question and said, are you sure they're not doves? All of a sudden, he wasn't sure. But that's that healthy dialectic where, you know, we're not disagreeing in a negative way. We're disagreeing in a fun way that's getting us both to look closer and to let go of what we're taking for granted or assuming and piercing that much deeper, right? And in doing that with Giannis, with Diogo, with Kieran and Pippa and who am I forgetting, Sarah?
Craig.
Oh, yeah, Craig. And yeah, there's two Craigs, Craig and Craig. Yes, Craig Foster and Craig Murray. You know, these guys are really into the sea forest, but they're also into the intertidal, you know, where the low tide and high tide, and you can see the mussels and the limpets and the little snails and the isopods and, you know, the other little creatures that are at the water's edge. But they're also interested in the beach and the caracal tracks, which is like a bobcat, you know, for us, and the Cape Clawless otter, which we had this wonderful observation of, and the seals and now the eland, and then you're looking at an ostrich against the edge of the sea. It was such a, like, everything is fair game to track. Everything, you know, I hear a little bird, I don't recognize it. I'm after it. I've got my binoculars. I'm trying to figure out what is that little bird. So everything is ripe for our curiosity and our exploration. And everybody is in this open state of, I love this game. I want to play this game with you, you know, and that how, Aiden, because you were wondering about the how. We all shared that intention. We never said it. We never sat together and said, hey, let's set our intentions. None of that. It was just like we all shared that intention, right? And I would say that I felt very bonded to those people very quickly. I felt like they were good friends within a couple of days. I am sure that tracking connects us faster to each other, to ourselves as well. And, you know, how quickly jet lag was gone, right? You know, like I wasn't bothered by the fact that we'd just flown from, you know, Yellowstone National Park to Newark, New Jersey to Cape Town and, you know, this long drive in traffic to Craig's place and, you know, then the drives and wanders on the beach. Like all that was just gone the moment we were out there playing together, because that's what it felt like. It felt like playing. And it really was playful. And it was very, I felt like I lost 10 years of age, you know, and everybody's so happy and their eyes are shining and their cheeks are rosy at the end of the day. And we're all sharing a meal together and people are just chattering with their stories and looking at each other's pictures. And, you know, it's such a deeply connected process. And I think, Sarah, observing, like, just think about what if you had gone like on some kind of package tour to Africa and it wasn't that, how different it would have been. And how quickly and deeply you got to connect to this place you've never been. So, yeah, I just wanted to observe that. And I have one more layer to add to that, but I want to stop for a minute and let you two chime in.
Yeah, I had the same experience of that ease of connection with the Sea Change folks. And I feel like it has a lot to do with what happens to us as individuals when we're tracking. We are not focused on our day-to-day chattery mind things, right? We're not thinking about work. We're not thinking about, you know, home life. We're really present in the moment, right? We're looking at what's happening here. Who has been here? Whose tracks are these? Where were they going? What were they doing? How are they relating to the other beings on this landscape? And how are they relating to the landscape itself, right? So we're automatically outside of or inside of our authenticity. And we're meeting each other on this storyline, right? We're meeting together on the same storyline. So there's this inherent excitement, as John is kind of describing, and engagement and presence, which is that sense of presence with other people is actually really hard to get to. If we're talking about normal social culture, you know, it's often externalized conversation, things, you know, about what's happening in the world or what's happening in our life, past and future, versus what's happening exactly right now here in nature, right? So it's not even just what's happening right now for me, say emotionally or personally, it's what's happening outside of my small self, right? What's happening with this greater whole that I am part of. So I think that drops us into, you know, really good statistics for connection, right? Because we're in our kind of purest mind, perhaps. And being with the Bushmen as well, did it connect us to the Bushmen faster? So we were with the Bushmen at Grasslands Lodge in the Kalahari Desert for a few days, and then also in the Delta, in the Okavango Delta for 3 or 4 days. And again, we were tracking and not sharing the same language. We didn't speak the same language. So there was not that social level of communication, but there was so much communication. And I loved, Aiden, you kind of talking about that continuum of intention, awareness, connection into communication, and the feeling of being engaged in the environment in basic silence with the Bushmen. You know, the Bushmen, we could share things like, you know, mongoose and Janet and, you know, identifying the names of the tracks, right? The name of the animal that made the tracks, and a few other phrases, but that shared presence of being on the landscape and, you know, the, oh, it's a leopard track. And, oh, it's a lion track, and this is where they're going, and sharing mysteries. Like, we spent, I don't know, 45 minutes on these mysterious little tracks that John had seen as we were driving by. Stop, stop, there's tracks, back up. And we all get out and pile around these little tiny tracks that are so curious and finally come to realize that they're hedgehog tracks, which was so fun for all of us, right? But so now that we're on the other side of the trip and we're home a few days, reflecting back on the sense of connection with the Bushmen, like I can feel them in my being. Like I can feel who they are, right? You know, when you have a really good friend for years or whatever, you can feel who they are, like a family member. They have a certain feeling. So with the Bushmen, I have a feeling of connection with them that just is very organic and very real, and a heart-centered experience of having shared together.
Yeah, that I echo that. And that style of exploration and curiosity together that I described with Craig Foster in the Sea Change Project. Oh, it sounds like a band where, you know, Sarah and I and Carol were jamming with them, so to speak, right? Like with that feeling got really strong with those guys. And then how delightful was it to arrive in the Kalahari and to hang out with Guta and Tama and Kakao and the other young Bushmen, right? The other Duma and Frets. And we instantly had that rapport with them, because that way that we're describing of being with Craig and the Sea Change Gang is exactly how the Bushmen are all the time with each other, right? Like, you know, it's like a reflection of the ancient nervous system. This is who we are wired to be, in essence, right? And because the Bushmen do it all the time, they're wide open to connection, so they can get into your heart much quicker than your average bear, so to speak, right? So that feeling that Sarah's saying, well, I really feel connected to them. We spent just as much time with Johnson, but I don't feel that same connection with Johnson, you know? And that other lovely Justice, you know, that young man, Justice, that was helping. And but I don't have that feeling with them, because it was the shared curiosity exploration thing, like the 45 minutes on the hedgehog thing. And you might wonder, like, well, how did we communicate to them hedgehog? Well, we had this cool little book that Sarah brought, which is Wildlife of the Yakavango, and then another one on tracks and sign of the animals of that area in Botswana there. So when I, you know, I'm thumbing through looking and I find this picture of the hedgehog tracks, I'm just like, look. So I could point and show them the pattern in the book and point to the one on the ground. And they're like, yeah, it's the same. And then I showed them the picture of the hedgehog and everyone's face lights up, because African hedgehogs are pretty darn cute. I didn't even know they existed. You know what I mean? Like, so, you know, really literally 45 minutes on a hedgehog trail. I mean, we didn't go outside 20 feet of that area, did we? That area was like 20 by 20 feet that hedgehog moved around in. And that completely engaged us for so long, with such back and forth and curiosity, and, you know, Setswana being spoken and Naro Bushman being spoken in English and back and forth and trying to figure it out, you know. And when we all realized it was a hedgehog, everybody lit up. Everyone's eyes lit up like, yeah, you know, that's just such a good way to be. I love what you've said, Sarah, that it's really about sharing the present with each other. You know, we're not bringing our past. We're not bringing our stories or whatever, our dramas, all that stuff just goes away. Along with the jet lag, right? Along with the discomfort of travel, all of a sudden you're just so alive and present and enjoying the moment. Every single moment is so savory and delicious. So just a shout out for that ancient way that we as children probably all did with each other, but kind of forgot the goodness of it, you know?
And I'm just relating that communication piece that we were talking about with the elephants and in other contexts as well, but also, you know, now with the Bushmen and not sharing a language, a common language, verbal language, right? We're sharing that common language of tracking and tracking each other, right? In a similar way that, well, the same way that we're tracking the elephants. What's the elephant feeling? You know, are they feeling intimidated, like they want to go away? Are they feeling comfortable and relaxed? Right, that we're tracking the elephants that way, and we're literally tracking other people that way. I mean, we're doing that all the time with each other, but in this context of us with the Bushmen, we didn't have another way. So there was just kind of a felt sense of each other, of being together. And, you know, if there was a curiosity, we did know how to say humbo and habomai, which is come and look. So we got to, you know, engage each other that way. But otherwise, there was so much communication and just following, okay, where's Gutta going on the landscape, right? Where's his curiosity pulling him toward? And so then maybe I would follow him and see kind of where what he was tracking, right? But then all that happens in the nonverbal realm, the communications that are expressed just sitting around dinner, you're sitting around the fire afterward. Sometimes Gutta and Toma and Johnson would speak together in Swana. And we didn't understand, but we could pick up on things, you know, and just feel there was a joke happening. I mean, that's kind of obvious, right? Because people are laughing. But the tone of the conversation and just the feelings in the body of reliving the experience of getting bluff charged by a juvenile elephant or seeing the lion tracks or seeing the hippo, you know, there's feelings that we tune into, I think, a little bit more when we're not able to understand linguistically what is being expressed.
You had said when you met up with Craig and you know, and his band, that there was, you know, you didn't really have to say anything. You just sort of fell into it. But I imagine that is a result of them having done a lot of work together to build up that connection beforehand so that the field was sort of already active when you got there. Same thing with the Bushmen, right? You're walking in, it feels like it's there right away. People are open for connection right away, but this doesn't happen by accident. It happens through, you know, a really intentional process. You know, I I'm thinking about it in these different layers. It's like we're learning to connect with nature and then find safety within that connection to nature that then allows us to be open to create connection and safety for others, whether that is the natural world or other humans. And then when you do that with other people, you sort of create a field that welcomes new people into that same safety, that same connection, right? And so I just think about this idea of, you know, where we're headed this fall with harmonizing with nature and embodying unity with nature, that's what we're going to spend the fall working on. Is looking at that as what are the processes that actually start to build that connection and those containers for ourselves and with nature, and then how does that lead into being able to do that with and for other people as well? So really cool stuff kind of hearing, you know, I mean, the biggest takeaway I have is just, I feel like that all sounds so lovely. It's like, once you could have that kind of connection, why would you want to do anything different? You know, it sounds really great. So thank you both for sharing this.
Yeah, and I think it caused Sarah and I to come back home with this double down feeling of, actually, we need to have that locally too. Like, we need to have a couple of pals that we can do what we did with the Sea Change Gang and Gutta and Tama, you know, we need that here too. You know, Sarah and I do that with each other, but there's something about a larger number of people doing that. You know, there's a sort of a diversity of energy and a bigger field. But you're right, Aiden, like, you know, the field is an intention itself, you know, like that connected group field, that culture of the group. And we can influence what that looks like. You know, we can actually request from each other that we would like it to be more in that present connective style. And that's what we will be teaching with Harmonizing with Nature at Living Connection First. So yeah, thanks for listening. We hope that you enjoyed going on this little journey, and I'll pass it over to Sarah.
Yeah, I think that piece around taking, it takes time and it takes practice to really embody connection and harmonizing with nature. It's an actual nervous system kind of shift to develop the capacity to really deeply listen and really deeply hear, right? And feel and be clear and feel, really experience connection, right? It's not an intellectual process, although the intellect is involved in understanding what's happening around us, that we're really going for that embodied experience of feeling the harmonization, right? That communication that happened with the elephants and with the Bushmen, right? We were describing it as actual visceral felt sense experiences, this like tuning of our own sensory experience.
Thanks for listening to Tracking Connections. You can find everything related to the podcast and our current offerings at trackingconnections.net. We'll see you next time.